So last time, what did we do last time? So last time we talked a little bit about the universal coefficient theorem. We talked, and then we spent some time on the Kinnith formula. And the kind of results of the Kinnith formula, one of the results of the Kinnith formula, was that if G and G prime are groups, then and let's say I actually want to work over an arbitrary ring for today. So let's say R is a commutative ring. And the only rings I'm going to care about are cyclic. So the examples I'm going to do are Z and Z mod N. And kind of I'll tend to write FP for the field Z mod P. So the statement from last time was that if G and G prime are groups, then there is a canonical map from the cohomology of G with R coefficients. Sorry. Not bold-faced R. R is just some random old ring, so it's an italic R. Censored over R with the cohomology of G prime with R coefficients to the cohomology of G times G prime with R coefficients, where R is a commutative ring and it's trivial as a G and G prime module. Untwisted cohomology. And what we saw was that under some size conditions, subject to G and G prime being not so large, there was some issue about the tensor product of dual vector spaces versus the there's some issue about like the tensor product of the dual versus the dual to the tensor product. The tensor product of the dual is usually the dual to the tensor product under some size constraints. But that's what I mean by size constraints. So for instance, if they're finitely presented groups, for instance, finite. Then we sort of understood this map. Then for instance, well, then the general statement is that if you replace tensor product over R with the derived tensor product, so that was something about that was the Tor complex. What the derived tensor product means is the Tor complex. Then this map, this is an ISO. And so in particular, what we did last time was we mostly focused on the case of Z. And R is Z. We said that the map is a when R is Z, the only Tor, there's like just the tensor product and there's Tor 1. Tensor, which is called Tor 0 and Tor 1. And then star is an injection with co-kernel Tor 1 of the tensor of the two things. And if R is a field, for instance, a cyclic group of prime order, then if R is a field, then all modules over a field are free. It's somehow one of the most fundamental facts that you prove in an undergraduate linear algebra class. And so there are no hired force. No force. Star is an Isaac. And then the where I sort of ended last time was to say that, to say, well, let's take the case when G and G prime are the same and look at the diagonal map from G into G times G. And then I said that, well, cohomology is contravariant for homomorphisms, and so we can look at the cohomology of G, insert the cohomology of G, mapping to the cohomology of G times G, and we can pull back along the diagonal map to the cohomology of G. And I said that this was called the cup product. So what I'd like to do today is to sort of study this cup product. I guess I said one more thing last time, which was I said that we actually understand what this is in the bar complex. So in the bar complex, the way the Kinnith formula worked was it said that if you took a chain, the Kinnith iso, took a pair of chains. It took the chain kind of, if I took an I chain G1, G2, GI, so this is an element in the I chains of G, and another I chain, say G prime one, G prime J. The Kinnith isomorphism just took the two chains and concatenated them. And that was the map from kind of I chains times J chains to I plus J chains. So that's now an I plus J chain.
So it's not going to be doing intersection. You're composing both at the same time.
So the on chains in the bar complex, the Kinnith map was just a concatenation map. There's no like intersection or anything. This is just, these are just chains. This is the way you should think of a chain in the bar complex is it's like an I simplex. So, you know, maybe it's a two chain. Maybe I is 2. So then this is like G1, G2, and their product G1, G2. That's what a chain looks like in the bar complex. And here I have, say, let's say J is 1, so that I can draw pictures. And then this is kind of G prime. And I'm taking those, I'm just concatenating them. I'm taking them to G1, G2, G prime to that three simplex. So I want to emphasize this is associative. I mean, anyway, this is like the concatenation is associative but not commutative, and that's going to be important. And so what we learned from that is that that tells us, that lets us read off the cup product on cocycles. So it follows that if A is an I cocycle and B is a J cocycle, or even an I cochain or J cochain. And these are like cocycles in the bar complex. Then I cup B, sorry, A cup B is supposed to be a cocycle, an I plus J cocycle, so it's supposed to eat, should be a function in the bar complex that eats I plus J variables, and it has a formula which is just you do A to the first one variables, and you multiply by, so these are cocycles valued in, say, some ring R, and you just multiply E and R, G I plus 1, G I plus J. There's I of these, there's J of these, and this is multiplication in the ring R. Okay? You guys happy so far? So now, let's actually compute the ring structure for Z mod 2. For example, let's take G to be the cyclic group Z mod 2. So I said this in terms of the bar complex, and something that we've been trying to drive home is that the bar complex is a terrible thing to ever work with. It's just too big, it's too unwieldy. Pretty much Z mod 2 is the only group that I can work with the bar complex for, and that's because instead of the full bar complex, you can use the normalized bar complex. So for G with Z mod 2, the normalized bar complex, bar coaching complex for computing, let's do the cohomology of Z2 with ring coefficients was just a complex that when R by zero, this was in degree zero, this is in degree one, multiplication by two. Two, three, and four, and so on. And normalized means that let's call the basis vectors P0, P1, P2, and so on. So what does normalized mean? Normalized means that a normalized cocycle, a cochain, a bar coaching is normalized if it vanishes. Yeah, it's called the coaching A. It's normalized if A of G1 through Gn is zero whenever some Gi is identity. That's what it means for a chain to be normal, for a cocycle to be normalized, or cochain to be normalized. So the reason why, so what that means is that for the cyclic group, so the point is that for Z mod 2, there's only one non-identity element. And so for Z mod 2, a normalized cochain is definite, must be A of G1 through Gn is, well, the only thing, you know, it's zero if some Gi is zero. So Z mod 2, I'm going to call the numbers 0 and 1, and write it additively. And some element in R if all Gi are 1. And those are the only possible normalized cochains for Z mod 2. As soon as you're in Z mod 3, there's 2 to the n normalized cochains. And so the normalized bar complex is still too big to work. But the normalized cochains are OK. So for Z mod 2, And so what you find is you find that in particular these basis vectors, what is the basis? Well, the basis of R is just the element 1 thought of as an element in R. And so the basis vector EI, so EI is the I cochain, which is 1 if all the GIs are 1. So maybe I call it E, yeah, whatever, EI, and 0 otherwise. And so you immediately see that the ith basis vector cupped with the jth basis vector is the I plus jth basis vector. The only way for this to be 1 is if every entry is 1, which, and that's the definition. Otherwise, this is some, you know, 1 times 0, or 0 times 1, or 0 times 0. And so, so now we can completely understand this ring. So in particular, what we find out is that if R is Z, then in cohomology, what do we have? Well, if R is Z, then multiplication by 2 is an injection. And so there's no cohomology in odd degrees. And what we find is that the cohomology is represented by the E even. I mean, there's a spanning set of cohomology classes. And the full what I'm saying is that the cohomology of Z mod 2 with Z coefficients, well, we already knew was Z0, Z2, it's sort of E2, 0, Z2, E4, and so on. And now I'm telling you that, like, E4 is E2 squared, E6 is E2 cubed, and so on. That's what we just computed. And so the cohomology as a ring is Z, I'll call this, I'm going to call E2 by the letter T, and I'll call this Z adjoint T mod, and the only ideal is the ideal 2T is equal to 0, where T has degree 2. Okay? On the other hand, if we're working over F2, when R is F2, all of these maps, multiplication by 2 is 0 if you're working mod 2. And so if R is F2, this is just F2 in every degree. The cohomology Z mod 2 with F2 coefficients. Well, we already knew it went F2, 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 and so on. And now I'm telling you that it's actually just the polynomial ring F2 adjoint X, where this has degree 1. So this was F2 times 1, F2 times E1, 2 times E2. And I'm telling you that, like, I'll write X for the generator in degree 1. So now I want to talk about cyclic groups in general. I won't do the form, well, So for cyclic groups in general, if G is a larger cyclic group, let's say Z mod n, some larger n, then we already computed the cohomology at the level of vector spaces, the level of abelian groups. So we already showed the complex that computed cohomology looked the same, except instead of multiplication by 2, it was multiplication by n at the level of abelian groups. But we have to compute the ring structure. So what do we already know? We already know that the cohomology of G with z coefficients went z, 0, zn, 0, zn, 0, zn, and so on. And so a reasonable guess, I mean, this is now just like you look and you guess, a reasonable guess is maybe this is z adjoint t mod kind of nt. That would certainly have this structure. And this guess turns out to be correct. But I haven't proved it to you. I'm just telling you that, in fact, that's the correct guess. Now, you should be cautious about guessing. Because sometimes your guesses are wrong. So if I look at the cohomology instead with, for the same G with Z mod N coefficients, Z mod N's a perfectly good ring. Well, we also know that one, that goes Zn, 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 and so on. And so you might guess maybe that's Z mod N adjoint X, where X has degree 1. Also a perfectly reasonable guess, given the Abelian group structure. And this is wrong. It's wrong except when N is 2. So let me tell you why it's wrong, and then we can actually sort of try to compute it a bit. So why must it be wrong? Well, see, the cup product is not just an associative product. It's wrong because the cup product is actually graded commutative on cohomology. It's not too hard to prove that. You can, for instance, prove it in the Bark complex. And if I have time, I'll sort of talk about it later, how one proves this. What I'm saying is that what does graded commutative mean? That means that A cup B, if A is an I cycle, is an HI, and B is an HJ, then A cup B is minus 1 to the I times J, B cup. And so in particular, if X has degree 1, say X is the generator of this guy in degree 1, if X has degree 1, then X cup X, well, it doesn't have to be 0, but it has to equal minus X cup X. And so 2X cup X has to be 0. And so it certainly can't be the generator of this guy. So we can revise our guess. So we have to revise our guess. So the basis of this is obviously 1. The basis here is x. Let's call y t the basis vector there. So the revised guess let's just try to incorporate this correction. So the revised guess is, which turns out to be correct, is that the cohomology of z mod n with z mod n coefficients is z mod n adjoint two variables, a generator x in degree 1, a generator t in degree 2. Subject to the relation that x squared, so x cup x, has to be, it doesn't have to be 0, but it has to be something which is sort of twice it is 0. So it's the, if n is odd, then twice it, like, then every element's divisible by 2. So being, you know, this, This would force x cup x to be 0 if n is odd. And if n is even, there's exactly one element in Z mod the n, twice of which is 0, one non-zero element. And so the answer is that like x squared is sort of n on 2 times t, where this means 0 if n is odd. Maybe I'll say it that way. Zero if n is odd, and n on 2t if n is even. So perfectly good ring, just not the most obvious. I'm trying to decide if I should prove the first statement. So the problem is I don't know a proof of this equality that uses, that's like, doesn't use some piece of machinery we haven't covered yet. So I'm going to give you a proof, but it's going to use it one piece of magic that we'll do in the next couple weeks, and then the proof will be complete. You can read a different proof if you have a copy of Hatcher, for instance. It's near the end of chapter 3 of Hatcher. Standard kind of one semester course in kind of like a second course in homological, and sort of Hatcher's like the standard textbook for kind of math PhD students learning algebraic topology. And like, this is the end of Hatcher. Sorry. But I'll give a shorter proof right now, except as I said, it's going to use a piece of magic. So so here's the idea of the proof. How do you prove this? So the idea of the proof of that, and as I said, I apologize. I'm going to use a little bit of machinery we haven't covered in the lectures. Goes as follows. So what the idea is the following. Well, the idea of the proof goes as follows. So you consider the circle just the one-dimensional circle, and it has an action by Z mod n, just the standard action by Z mod n on the circle by 2 pi on n rotation. So I'm going to call Z mod n g. And the quotient, this action is free. And the quotient is another circle. Right? This is just the quotient is like you take the circle and you wind it around itself three times. There's a threefold cover of the circle. The top circle rotated by the 2 pi rotation downstairs was 2 pi and 3 rotation upstairs. And we know the cohomology of the circle. So the circle has you can write as a complex with just two, there's sort of a bar complex for the circle, which just has two generate a chain in degree 0 and a chain in degree 1. So the cohomology of S1 with Z coefficients is just Z in degree 0, Z in degree 1, and zeros everywhere else. And I'll call this generator, this is like the basis is 1, and the basis here I'll call S. So this is Z adjoint S mod S squared, where S has degree 1. S for circle. Okay. Now, the piece this much I hope you'll just like you've seen before, you believe me, but this is the cohomology of the circle. Now the piece of magic that I'm not gonna justify today, but hopefully by the end of the class, in maybe 2 weeks, we will have done, is one piece of magic. So theory of spectral sequences. Implies the following. I'm not going to develop that theory today because it's a sort of long story and it sort of requires some cut products, but I want to give you sort of a proof, the only proof of this that I know. Theory of spectral sequences implies the following. It implies, I'm going to call these and I want to emphasize one other thing, which is that the action of G on this cohomology is trivial. So I drew it this way, but I could have drawn it as you could draw the circle with kind of n many pieces. So I guess this is a picture where n is 5. Draw the circle as an n-gon, and then the cocycle here. Anyway, cocycle is like the sort of the volume form on the circle, and so when you rotate, the volume form stays constant. You might have had some other manifold where volume forms got moved around. I'm using the fact that the action is true. The theory of spectral sequences implies then, in this case, that there is a differential. A differential on the cohomology of G, everything's with Z coefficients, tensored with the cohomology, derived tensored with, it's just an ordinary tensor. I mean, what I should say is the cohomology of G times the cohomology of S1. And if the cohomology of S1 weren't free, I would have to do some tours. But these vanish because the cohomology of S1 is torsion free. The tours.
Yeah.
I'm basically, there's like, what I'm saying is like, as I said, I'm using some black box magic. I'm saying that in general, when you have an action of a group on a manifold, you can take the tensor product of the cohomology of the group and the cohomology of the manifold. You have to twist the tensor product if the action is worse. But because the group acts trivially in cohomology in this case, you can take the tensor product of the group and the manifold, and you can compare that to the cohomology of the quotient, which in our case is also the cohomology of S1. And they're not equal in general. In fact, they're not equal in this case. I already see that. But the statement is there exists a differential on the first one such that the cohomology of that complex, so let's call the differential delta, such that the cohomology of the tensor product complex with differential delta is equal to the cohomology of the base, of the quotient. Did I get that right? Might have gotten it back. I have two different S1s and I get it all confused. No. No. I said it right the first time.
You said these are not equal, and then you wrote that they're equal.
So the cohomology of S1 modulo G is another S1, so these two are equal.
Oh.
And I'm saying that there exists, this guy is not the same as this guy. That's obviously, they're obviously different because, I mean, we can work out what this is. But you could take this complex, it admits yet another differential. This is some like graded abelian group. And the statement is that there exists some differential such that the cohomology of that complex with this new differential computes the cohomology of this. And moreover, this differential is a derivation, meaning that the differential of A cup B is the differential of A cup B plus minus 1 to the degree of A cup differential of B. And that this is actually an isomorphism of rings. As I said, I'm not going to say why this is true right now. There's a sort of whole theory that we have to develop to justify this. But now I'll use this statement to prove the result. So,
is the circle using a Dirac cohomology?
No. It doesn't matter. I'm doing ordinary cohomology of manifolds, but I need to work integrally. So it's not Dirac. Dirac is like real valued because Dirac forms are real valued. So for instance, cellular cohomologies. And the best way to set this up is actually a cellular cohomology. So you write the circle as an n-gon. That's a cell decomposition of the upstairs circle. So this is an n-gon. And then the quotient is just a one-gon. And then you can actually just do this exactly. And so now I can do it. So we've already computed that the cohomology,
So the statement right there is that calculating the homology with that differential is calculated the one you did the quotient? What's the homology? What do you have? Is that the homology of the circle? That whatever your tensor is inside of that? What's the object?
Sorry, it's the, you take this whole complex, you turn on a new differential, and the cohomology of that will compute the cohomology of the quotient. In this case, I mean, there's a much more complicated story, and I'm telling you the corollary in this example where I've used some simplifications that are only true in this example. And so now we can just compute this. So we know the cohomology of S1. Well, we knew it was Z in degree 0, and Z kind of S in degree 1, and then S squared is 0. And the cohomology of G, where G is still Z mod N, was Z in degree 0, 0 in degree 1, Z mod N, 0, Z mod N, 0, and so on. And for now, I'll just call these basis vectors, I'll call this like Z mod N E, Z mod N T, and then T1, and Z mod N T2, and so on, just to give names to the basis vectors. And what am I trying to prove? I'm trying to prove that T2 is T1 squared. And so the cohomology, so when I take the tensor product, I don't have to do any tors because these are free. And so the tensor product, I have Z times, this is like the basis vector is 1. Here's ZS, 0, 0. And here's Z mod N. Z tensor Z mod N is just Z mod N with kind of basis vector T1. And then here's a Z mod N with basis vector T1 times S in the tensor product, 0, 0. And here's a Z mod N with basis vector T2. And here's a Z mod N with basis vector T2 times S, and so on. And the degree is the total degree. So this part's degree, total degree. So the here's, and then everything else is zeros above. And so the total degree is just the sum of the two degrees. So now we say, what could the differential be? Well, this part's good. I want this to give me, I want to get a differential so that the cohomology is Z in degree 0 and Z in degree 1 and nothing else. And so the point is to get a Z in degree 1, I need to kill this T1. So the differential ends up having to send S to T1. So it must satisfy that delta of S is T1 or some invertible multiple of T1. That's the only thing that it could happen. So must have delta of S is T1. And then the kernel, that was a surjection, so there's no cohomology here. but the kernel is n multiples of s, so the kernel is a z. And then that means that delta of st1 and delta of t1 must be zero, because there's t1's in degree two, and there's the only thing in degree three is here, but it can't happen there. And then you find out that delta of st1 must be t2, but it also, by the differential, is t1 times t1. And then you keep going. So that's the idea of the proof. So that proves that t2 is t1 squared, and t3 is t1 times t2. I don't need you to understand all the details of this. I just wanted to give a sense of how one might actually, how these things are computed, and kind of plant the seeds of spectral sequences. Questions? Yeah.
Can you elaborate on what that arrow is?
Oh, what I'm saying is that this is a picture. What I drew here was a picture of the cohomology of S1 tensored the cohomology of G. It's a two-dimensional picture because it's a bigraded. I mean, it's naturally bigraded, although at the end of the day, I only want it to be singly graded. And I need to turn on a differential. Well, the differential has to be a degree one thing. And it, whatever the date of the differential is, it's enough to tell you where basis vectors go. So for instance, the basis vector S has to go to something in degree two, because S has degree one. The only thing in degree two is this part. And so I have to tell you where S goes, and it turns out that the only possibility is that S has to go to T1. And that's forced by the fact that you need the quotient to be something, to just be a Z. So I have to kill off this Z mod n completely. And once I know that S goes to T1, then the rest follows from the fact that it's a derivation. So it has to say, and then you could ask, maybe T1 would go to T1S, but it can't because that. So because it's a derivative, because it's a differential, if S goes to T1, then T1 has to go to zero. Because it's a boundary in particular, it has to be a cycle. So that means that T1 has to go to zero. And so now you can ask, where does T1 at? So it's good. And now you have T1S, which you have to decide where it goes, but you know where it goes because it has to satisfy this formula. I mean, it would be, on the one hand, it has to go to T2, because these two things have to, at the end of the day, I'm not supposed to have any cohomology in degree two. So the only way to kill this cohomology in degree two is to kill it from here, to have the differential be surjective on that part. And the only way to kill the cohomology in here in degree two is for it to inject here. And the only way to and that killed this cohomology. And the only way to kill this cohomology is to cancel it with this cohomology. And on the other hand, so that means that d of t1s has to be t2. On the other hand, d of t1s has to be d of s t1 plus or minus s dt1 minus. And this we already decided was zero. So that's just t1 times t1. So up to multiplying basis vectors by numbers that are invertible mod n, this is the only way that the differential could work. Up to a change of basis, this is the only thing.
Out the possibility that delta s equals to t1 minus.
Sorry?
How do you rule out the possibility that delta s equals to t1 to the power minus?
T1 minus what?
T1 to the power minus the inverse of t1.
T1 has degree 2. So t1 inverse.
In the group.
Oh, inverse in a good, so negative t1.
Yes.
You don't. Of course, it could have been if n, let's take n to be, I don't know, it's 10, then you could have had, 7t1 or minus t1 or something. All it has to be is some generator, some generator of this abelian group. But up to a change of basis of this abelian group, that might as well have been t1. So sure, I mean, maybe it's not this t1. Maybe it's actually 7t1. So I'll just, you said maybe it's minus t1. Fine, then I'll just call t1 prime to be minus t1.
So then your t2 equals to minus t1.
Okay, so then this is, then I'll just rename T1 prime to be, so then I'll change my basis to being T1 prime. And now I, wherever this T1 prime s goes, it has to be some multiple of T2. Maybe it's 7T2. And so I'll just call that T2 prime. But it has to be an invertible multiple. So it's just a change of basis. Okay. I think my next goal is to compute. My next goal is to understand the cohomology of elementary abelian groups. Maybe you don't know what an elementary abelian group is. So I'll just do it by example. So an elementary abelian group is a product of cyclic groups of prime of all the same of prime order. So the example, I'll use E for elementary. And let's just look at Z mod 2 to some power. And let's just take them the same. Yeah, so an elementary abelian P group, in general, an elementary abelian P group, this means ZP to the sum. Literally, what it means is you're an abelian group. And those can always be written as products of cyclic groups. A P group is one where every element has order P, or every element has order a power of P. An elementary abelian means every element has order exactly. And then it's a nice exercise that if you have an abelian group for which every element has order P, it has to be of this shape. So there are non-abelian groups where every element has order P.
Say that last statement again.
There is a non-abelian group of order 27 where every element has order 3. If you'd like to ignore me for the next hour, find it. There's exactly one non-abelian group of order p cubed where, yeah. Okay, just as an aside, let's remind the classification of finite groups, of small finite groups. So this is a recollection from the algebra course that most of you didn't take. So the groups, I'll just do the p groups, the groups of prime power order. So remember that the groups of prime power order for large power is just a wild problem, and you'll never classify them. But at the beginning, you can do it. So the groups of order p to the 1, a group of prime order is definitely a cyclic group. A group of order p squared, there's two of them. There's z mod p squared, and there's z mod p squared. Why? Because every p group has, so one of the first theorems you prove in kind of an advanced undergraduate group theory class is if you have a p group, then it has a non-trivial center. In fact, it has elements of order p which are central. And so your p group is a central extension of z mod p by something else. By the order that something else has to be z mod p. And so it's an extension of z mod p by z mod p. And Meng-Guo told you how to count extensions. And up to isomorphism, there's only two of those. So the point is that H2 of z mod p with z mod p coefficients is z mod p. So there's p extensions, but only two isomorphism types. Remember, Meng had this thing where she did the case of Z2 by Z4, by the Klein 4 group, there were 8 extensions, but only a couple isomorphism types. Okay?
How do you identify the two that are isomorphic?
So the point is that Z mod P has a bunch of automorphisms, the coefficients. Yeah. that are like multiplication by any invertible number mod p, and those also act here. And so that gives you isomorphisms of the center, and that means that all the non-zero numbers here give you isomorphic groups. But the zero number is not in the same orbit, so it's a non-isomorphic group.
But if it involves cohomology, why do we learn it in the elementary algebra course?
Because you can do this classification without doing cohomology. But now that you have it, it's very fast. Okay, so there was one of these, there were two of these. And the last one that you might have done in an undergraduate course, after this it becomes hard. But the last one is the groups of order p cubed. And there are exactly, it turns out there's exactly five of them. And I'll list all of them. There's z mod p cubed, z mod p times z mod p squared, z mod p cubed. Those are the abelian ones. And two non-abelian ones. Up to isomorphism. And as I said, like this is just sort of facts that you should just learn from the undergraduate course you may or may not have taken. The two isomorphic, you can do this. Like you have the tools now. You can just sit down and prove this. The two non-isomorphic ones, if p is odd, there's a slight difference between whether p is even or odd. So first of all, I'll do the case when p is 2. When p is 2, you already did this classification because Meng Guo did it last week or the week before, I don't remember, where she said that there were two non-abelian groups of order 8. There's the dihedral group of order 8 and the quaternion group of order 8. And the difference is that what's the difference that I'm trying to draw? Well, anyway, there's these two. And when p is odd, there's also two. The statement when p is odd is that there's one where some elements have order 9. I mean, the only possible orders of an element in a group of order, not 9, order p squared. P is 3 for me. I mean, if you have a group of order p cubed, the only possible orders are 1, p, p squared, and p cubed. If you have an element of order p cubed, then you're the cyclic group. So for a non-abelian group, it has to be either, there's the identity of order 1, and the other elements have order either p or p squared. So for one of these, some elements have order p squared, and the other, all elements have order p. And this one is actually the more important one, the more common one. This is called this is basically a Heisenberg group. And if you think through what the sort of canonical commutation relations should be in characteristic p, you'll invent this. So this comes from quantizing things a lot, and there's a lot of people in this building that study exactly this group. And I don't know, people don't study this one as much. Because it's like less important. I mean, it's less beautiful. Okay. Anyway, I want to talk about first the elementary abelian group of order, the elementary abelian 2 group, and then we'll do the odd prime as well. You've probably learned that there's a lot of mathematics. There's like basically there's sort of stuff at the prime 2, and there's stuff at the odd, like all the odd primes sort of are the same. There's like the even prime and the odd prime for the purposes of doing these types of classifications. I don't know why 2 is so special. Okay, so first let's do the cohomology with Z2, with F2 coefficients. So the Knuth formula with F2 coefficients is really easy. This is a power, and the, remember the Knuth formula over a field is easy. It's just a tensor product. It says that the product of groups becomes the tensor product of cohomology. And so this is just the cohomology of Z mod 2 k-fold tensor power. And we already know this. We already computed that this was F2 adjoint X, where X is in degree 1. And so the whole thing is a polynomial ring on k variables. These all have degree 1. OK? So now what we want to understand is the cohomology with Z coefficients. So last time with the Knuth formula was enough to compute this at the level of additively. So we already know this is, so the Knuth formula tells us that this is non-canonically isomorphic. Canonically iso to some Z mod 2 to some power, where this, of course, depends on the degree and whatever k I'm working on. And we wanted more, we wanted up to, we want a canonical, and we want the ring structure. Today, my goal is to get the ring structure, say, you know, and explain it canonically. So, to do that, I want to remind the long exact sequence from short exact sequences from a few weeks ago. So the way the short exact sequence to long exact sequence went was anytime you had a short exact sequence of coefficients, for instance, the sequence Z going by multiplication by 2, going by mod 2 reduction to F2, if you had a short exact sequence of coefficients, you get a long exact sequence of cohomology, which went the cohomology, let's say for E, doesn't matter, with Z coefficients, so the cohomology of E, and this was just still multiplication by 2, it's whatever this map is, of E with Z coefficients, so the, and taking the mod 2 reduction, cohomology of E with F2 coefficients. And then there was some differential, which I'm going to call beta. I'm going to call it beta sub z to the cohomology in degree next degree z coefficients, and so on. And I'm going to call this beta sub z. The letter beta stands for, this stands for integral, the z stands for integral, because there's the integers here. And the beta stands for boxed. Bachstein, depending on how Germanic you feel. Okay? So this, you get a long exact sequence like this for any group. But now, for the elementary abelian group, what do we know? We know that these two groups, well, they're the same. But what do we know? We know that this group is non-canonically isomorphic to Z mod 2 to some power, if E is elementary abelian. Which means that for the case of E, for E elementary abelian, what we know is that this multiplication by 2 map is 0. And this is also multiplication. So multiplication by 2 is 0 on cohomology. So this is the zero map, and this is the zero map. And so we can take our long exact sequence and just snip it apart into little short exact sequences. So what we find out is that if you take the ith cohomology of E with Z coefficients and reduce by 2 to the ith cohomology of E with F2 coefficients, and remember, this is just some degree I polynomials in K variables, and then apply the integral box stamp, that this is exact, a short exact. Okay. So said another way, what we've learned, so mod 2 reduction is a ring homomorphism already, but what we know is that this is actually then a subring. Is a subring by mod 2 reduction. Of the cohomology with F2 coefficients, which we said was. And it's specifically, we know which subring it is. Specifically, it is the subring, which is the kernel. And it is the kernel of the integral Bachstein. Okay, so then all we have to do is understand the integral Bachstein. Doesn't seem so bad. It has a very short name. Maybe there's only two letters. Maybe it won't be too. Yes.
Stupid question. Yeah. So why don't we understand the mod 2 reductions?
Why don't we work on the mod 2 reduction step? So the answer is that we don't know what this is. We're trying to compute it. And so to compute this function is a little bit hard because I don't know what the inputs of the function are. I know what its outputs are. But like we think about functions in terms of like a function takes an input to something, and we declare like what's the value of the function on the inputs. We do know this space. And so to understand this function is just a question of understanding what its values on this vector space is. I mean, this is just a vector space over F2. In any case, I want to talk about the Bachstein, so that's why I'm talking about it. So let me remind how the Bachstein was constructed. So remember how the Bachstein was constructed. So the Bachstein, so let's say that we're working, that A is a 2 cocycle, sorry, an I cocycle. Or with F2 coefficients. Okay? So A lives here, or rather I have a cocycle representative of A. Okay? Now I want to tell you what the Bachstein of A is. So the way that the Bachstein worked was you choose any lift. So this is actually, I mean, I really want A to, I mean, I really want it to be a co-chain with F2 coefficients, and in fact, an I cosine. Let's choose any lift of it to a Z co-chain. For example, we could declare in the, you know, for example, in the bar complex, we could just use, like, you could just take a set theoretic inclusion. You could just say that, like, A twiddle of G1 through GI is A of G1 through GI. I mean, is where A is either valued in 0 or 1, so you just take 0 or 1 as integers. So there was an example. You didn't have to use that. You could take any lift. And if you're in some other resolution, if you're not in the bar complex, maybe you do something else. But for the bar complex, there's an example. And then, so you choose any lift of it. And then you look at DA total. That's an I plus 1 cochain. And what you know is that if you reduce this mod 2, it's 0. Since A was a cocycle, dA is 0 mod 2. So it's valued in even numbers. And so you can take half of it. Makes sense as an I plus 1 cocycle. And, you know, dA twiddle was a cocycle because it's a coboundary. So this is a cocycle because it's a coboundary. So taking half of it is still a cocycle, but not necessarily a coboundary anymore. Being a coboundary, like, it was a coboundary of something which was odd. So that something which was odd, you couldn't take half of it. So this doesn't have to be a coboundary anymore. I mean, it might be, but it doesn't have to be. But it's still a cocycle, because the cocycle relation is just some linear equation. So this is still a cocycle. Cocycle. And it is the Bachstein of A. Or rather, it represents the Bachstein of A in cohomology. OK? So in principle, if you had cocycle representatives, you'd be able to compute the Bachstein. But you know, nobody should work with cocycle representatives. You should work with something robust like cohomology. So the reason I went through that whole exercise was to say that there's actually another Bachstein. The reason I'm calling this beta sub z. Actually, before I say that, let me point out that something we know already. So we already know, just from this formula, at least if we're working in the bar complex and I use this lift, that we already see that actually that means. See, what do we know? We know that D of a cup product is, for instance, in the bar complex, D is a derivation of cup products. Oops. Minus 1 to the degree of A cup D of B. And the Bachstein formula, and see, the lift is like not quite additive, but it is. Multiplicative if I use the lift that's in 0 to 0 and 1 to 1. And so what you find out from that formula is that also for this Bachstein, let me not say that. Sorry, I want to reduce mod 2. There's some issue with signs that I don't want to have to handle. So let's reduce mod 2. So what we find out at least is that so there's some issues with like the difference between lifting to 2 and lifting to 0. So what we find out at least is that the reduction mod 2, the Bachstein of A cup B, is like the Bachstein of A cup B plus A cup the Bachstein of B, at least mod 2. So I really want to, I'm actually just going to work with this reduced mod 2 version of the Bachstein. So the mod 2 Bachstein, the beta, this was the, I erased it. This beta z is called the integral Bachstein. The mod 2 Bachstein I really want to work with the mod 2 Bachstein. The mod 2 Bachstein is the connecting map, not for Z to Z to Z mod 2, but for, you could like a Z mod 2 including into Z mod 4 mapping to Z mod 2. And you play the same game. And you get the connecting map. So the mod 2 Bachstein is the connecting map. That's the definition of the mod 2 Bachstein. The connecting map for the long exact sequence for the 2 to 4 to 2 exact sequence. And the same formula, like exactly the same formula that we did over here, is just you use the same formula. So the point is that the mod 2 Bachstein, I'll call it beta sub 2. And the point is that beta sub 2 is just the integral Bachstein and then reduce mod 2. And so the statement, the correct statement that I'm sure is true. Yes. And then when I reduce mod 2, then I don't have to worry about signs and so on. Is it the mod 2 Bachstein of a cup product? The mod 2 Bachstein is a derivation. But say, look, in the case of the elementary abelian group, we already know that mod 2 reduction is an injection for elementary abelian groups. See, Victor, I am using stuff about mod 2, about the other side of that. So if E is elementary abelian, then we already showed that the mod 2 reduction is an injection. So that means that the kernel of the integral Bachstein has to be equal to is just the same as the kernel of the mod 2 Bachstein. So just to summarize what we know, so see, that means that what do I want to compute? So the conclusion of this so far is that we have this ring. We have the cohomology of E with F2 coefficients, which is a ring we completely understand. It's just a polynomial ring. And it has some endomorphism on it called the mod 2 Bachstein. It has this degree 1 map. Called the mod 2 Bachstein. Which is, the mod 2 Bachstein was something that took Z mod 2, you know, cohomology with F2 coefficients to cohomology with F2 coefficients. And we want the kernel of this map. As a ring. So it's a degree one map. We already saw it's a derivation. One more observation is that it squares to zero. So it's actually a differential. Why is it a differential? It's a differential because beta 2 composed with beta 2. Well, the mod 2 Bachstein is the integral Bachstein composed with reduction mod 2. But reduction mod 2 and then the integral Bachstein, those were two adjacent maps in the long exact sequence. So the long exact sequence was Z by mod 2 to F2 by the integral Bachstein. So that has to be 0. So we actually have a chain complex. So a cohomology of E with F2 coefficients in Bachstein is a DGA. And we want the kernel. We don't want the cohomology of it, we want the kernel. Okay, do we understand this DGA? Yes. So what we know yet more. So I want you to believe that everything was so canonical that I just did, that surely the Kunneth formula must sort of work compatibly with the Bachstein. That's true. I mean, everything's very, very canonical. So let's look at the case when when k is 1. So when E is just Z mod 2. I'll say it. So when E was Z mod 2, we already understood, we knew that the cohomology of E with F2 coefficients was F2 adjoint X, where this had degree 1. And the cohomology of E with Z coefficients was, it had a Z rather than an F2 in degree, I mean, like, it's the kernel of B2 except for in degree 0 where it's a Z and not an F2. But whatever. This was essentially just, except for in degree 0, this was essentially F2 adjoint T, where T has degree 2. I mean, except in degree 0. It was Z in degree 0, not F2 in degree 0. And the mod 2 reduction was definitely the inclusion. So it has to send T to X squared. So this must be T goes to X squared. And so what do we have? We have some differential on F2. So we're looking for a differential. I mean, this has just a basis. The basis here, like, anyway, so B2, what must it be? So B2 of X should not be in the kernel. X is not in the image of mod 2 reduction, so it cannot be in the kernel of the Bachstein. So this must be non-zero, just because of what we know already. And it has to be degree 2. So the only thing it could be is X squared. That's the only thing in degree 2. And similarly, B2 of X to the odd, X to the odd powers are not in the image here. So they have to go to the even powers. Say X to the N where N is odd had better be X to the N plus 1. And B2 of X to the N, I mean, had better be. See, I'm trying to say that the even powers of X are in the image, so they have to be in the kernel of the Bachstein. And the odd powers of X are not, so they have to not be in the kernel. So the only possibilities are that this is 0 if N is even, and X to the N plus 1 if N is odd. Because that's the only thing in that degree. But it's a derivation, so the right way to write this is that this is just N times X to the N plus 1. Because I'm working 1, 2. So that means that the Bachstein itself is just x squared by dx. It's a derivation. And now if we look at a general group, a general elementary abelian group, well, the mod 2 cohomology was, in general, it's, I mean, if I choose a basis for E, then I get a basis for the generators here. So that was like F2, X1, XK. And the Bochstein is xi squared d by dx. And I just want to remark something. This is called the freshman's dream. Which is that x plus y squared is x squared plus y squared. And any of you who've ever taught a calculus course know why it's called this. And so it doesn't matter what basis I'm using. This is actually a linear method. The Bochstein of A is A squared if the degree of A is 1. Very strange. In characteristic 2, squaring is a linear map. In characteristic 3, cubing is a linear map. In characteristic 5, taking the fifth power is a linear map. And so we've done it. We completely understand the cohomology of elementary abelian groups. You can now just work it out. So for instance, let me work out the Klein-4 group for you. So for instance, for the Klein-4 group, if you write down the cohomology with F2 coefficients, I'll just write down a basis for it. So there's 1 in degree 0. In degree 1, there's 2 generators, x and y. In degree 2, there's 3 generators. I'm not doing anything exciting right now. X cubed, x squared y, xy squared, y cubed. In degree 4, maybe I'll go up to degree 5 or so. X4, x cubed y, x squared, xy cubed, y4. Squared. Squared y cubed, xy4, y5. You know how the numbers work. How does the Bochstein work? Well, x goes to x squared, y goes to y squared. So these are not in the kernel, but these are in the kernel. Xy goes to the sum of x squared plus y squared. X cubed goes to x4, xy cubed goes to y4, x squared y, if you apply the Bochstein, you get, what is the Bochstein of x to the a, y to the b? Well, it's ax to the a plus 1 y to the b plus bx to the a, y to the b plus 1, because you either differentiate in the first spot or the second spot. So this goes to, if you differentiate in the x spot, you get twice something, so that's 0. If you differentiate in the y spot, you get x squared y squared. And then you get a picture like that. So there's one more remark that I failed to make. I said we have a chain complex. Did I erase it already? No, I didn't. See, when we constructed the mod 2 Bochstein, we didn't use anything about E. It was always, the mod 2 Bochstein makes sense always. It's always the mod 2 reduction of the integral Bochstein. It's always a degree 1 map. It's always a derivation. It's always a differential. So this part holds for E, an arbitrary group. It was only the fact that the integral cohomology is the kernel of the Bachstein that's only for elementary abelian groups. In general, the relation is much more complicated. But when E is elementary abelian, actually, let me say this over. I want to say this. Yeah, let's say it over here. So we can go back and say that when E is elementary abelian, see when E is Z mod 2, the Bachstein was like there was x squared, and the derivative of x is x squared, x cubed, the derivative was x4, and so on. And so when E is Z mod 2, this complex, the mod 2 cohomology of E with F2 coefficients with the Bachstein is essentially exact. I mean, it's exact except in degree 1. Sorry, degree 0. Because it was just like, you know, everything died. And so that means that actually the complex F2 with the mod 2 Bachstein is just by tensor product. When you tensor product exact complexes together, you get another exact complex if you're working over a field. And F2 is a field. And so this is also exact away from degree 0 if E is elementary abelian. I mean, for any power. And here's what it looks like. Here's the exact complex. And so now we can just give some names to things. So that means that, so the kernel of the Bachstein is also the image of the Bachstein because it's exact. And so that's the easiest way to read off the things. So here's a guy, so I'll box the guys that survive. The sum of these two is in the image. That's in the Z cohomology. This guy's in the Z cohomology, this guy's in the Z cohomology, this guy's in the Z cohomology, this guy's in the Z cohomology. This guy's in the Z cohomology. And so we could give these names. Let's call this A, let's call this B, let's call this theta. So theta is x squared y plus y squared. And so what I'm saying is that the cohomology of the Klein 4 group with Z coefficients goes Z0 is A and B, there's theta in degree 3. This is obviously A squared, this is obviously B squared, here's AB. As a ring. And then you can work out that this is like A times theta, here's B times theta. And then the next one is the first one that's interesting. Let's see, we should really do it. So this is x6. That's obviously A cubed. Here's x4 y squared, which is obviously a squared b, a b squared, and b cubed. And the only question is, what is theta squared? So theta squared, that's x squared y plus x y squared squared. By the freshman dream, that's x4 y squared plus x squared y4. In characteristic 2, squaring is linear. And so this is a squared b plus ab squared. So think the answer for the Klein 4 group. nobody's watching at home because I didn't actually look this up ahead of time to confirm it in the literature, is that this is has three generators, A, B, and theta, where this is degree 2, and this is degree 3. And the relations are that 2A, 2B, 2 theta are all 0, so they're all characteristic 2 objects, and theta squared is A squared B plus AB squared. And if not, I mean, you have the tools to kind of continue this and check it. Okay, so now let me talk briefly about the numbers that aren't 2. So you can repeat the story for Z mod n. We can repeat the story Z mod n. You can look at the Z mod n Bachstein. You can look at the map Z multiplication by n to Z mod n reduction to Z mod n. And so you also get, so that gives you the long, an integral Bachstein and a mod n reduction. Or z mod n to z mod n squared to z mod n, which gives you the sort of mod n Bachstein. And just as before, for powers of Z mod n, in particular for Z mod n itself, this is acting by 0, by on cohomology, by the Kinnith formula. And so, so for instance, you know, the cohomology of Z mod n with Z coefficients, which we already computed was Z adjoint T mod n T. Maps injects by mod n reduction into the cohomology with Z mod n coefficients, which surjects, I mean, there's a short exact sequence, so the cohomology with Z coefficients by the integral Bachstein. And you can repeat the analysis. And I won't do all of it, but I'll just tell you the answer because, I don't know, it's almost noon. So when you repeat the analysis, you find out that the cohomology of Z mod n with Z mod n coefficients, well, we already said what it was as a ring. I asserted to you the answer. I didn't actually prove it to you, but this analysis would actually be a way to derive this answer. What you can show is that as a ring, I told you this was Z mod n adjoint two generators, x and t, where the only relation was that x squared was 0 if n is odd, and n on 2t if n is even. The 0 was forced just by the symmetry rules. And the n on 2, what you know from the symmetry, from graded commutativity, is this is either 0 or n on 2. And you can get that it's n on 2 by reducing mod 2. Or by restricting, rather, to the mod 2 subgroup. So we did actually have enough to prove this already. We should say that. So this is forced by graded commutativity. And this one is forced by graded commutativity and restricting to the Z mod 2 inside of Z mod n. If n is even, it has a Z mod 2 inside of it. Restricting cohomology is a homomorphism. I mean, it's a ring. And now what I'm telling you is that the new thing that you can get from doing this Bachstein analysis is that the mod n Bachstein of sort of t sends x to t. And since it's a derivation, I'm saying that the mod n Bachstein is like t d by dx, where x squared is some multiple of t. Okay? And so the thing I want to end by saying is that you know, it might have disappointed you that this wasn't quite generated by x. This had the right degrees to be generated by x in degree 1. But as a ring, this was not generated by x in degree 1. I needed two generators in a relation. But you could invent a notion. Let's do it. Let's invent the following notion. It says that you know, I really want it to be generated in degree 1. I want a notion of ring where it's generated in degree 1. Well, what do I know? I know that mod n cohomology always has this thing called the mod n Bachstein. So let's invent the notion that says that mod n, let's call it a Bachstein ring. Let's just invent that notion. Is a graded commutative ring over Z mod n with a it's actually not just a ring, but a DGA, graded commutative, actually a DGCA. So with a derivation called the mod n Bachstein, which should have degree 1, n squared is 0. And just for the hell of it, let's build this directly into the definition of the mod n Bachstein, because it actually always holds. And eta n of x, n on 2 beta n of x should be x squared if x has degree 1. I mean, the notion of mod n Bachstein, like a notion of a mod n Bachstein ring, depends on whether n is even or odd. If n is odd, x squared is already 0 from the sign rules, and I'm telling you nothing. If n is even, I'm telling you the relation between x squared and the Bachstein. And then the punchline is just that the mod n cohomology is that the cohomology of Z mod n, Z mod n coefficients, is free on a single generator as a Bachstein ring. Now, a polynomial ring is free on a single generator as a ring. This is not free as a ring, but it's free as a Bachstein. So, and notice I just had to like invent the notion of Bachstein ring for that to work. So that was the first punchline. And the second punchline was that the cohomology of any group is a Bachstein ring. because the construction of the Bakshtin was totally canonical. The proof that it squared to zero didn't use anything about the underlying group. It was just the fact that it was like the Mod-n reduction of something. And the fact that it satisfies this equation, well, it's only an equation about X having degree one. And what do you know about the degree one cohomology? What does it mean to say that X has degree one? That means that X is in H1 of G with Z mod n coefficients. Yeah, write this bigger. X having degree one, that means that X is in H1 of G with Z mod n coefficients, which is just the homomorphisms from G to Z mod n. And the notion of the Bakshtin was a very functorial thing. It survives restriction along groups. And so restriction maps are not just ring homomorphisms, but they're Bakshtin ring homomorphisms. And so the fact that this holds, this equation held in Z mod n, and so it holds when you restrict along any homomorphism to Z mod n. Since the boxed equation holds in Z mod n, it holds for all G. Okay. And so I'm going to stop. The reason why I was saying all this is because in the next week or two, we'll develop a much more sophisticated version of this that doesn't just have the Bakshtin, but has a lot of other operations in it. So it turns out that there's infinitely many operations that are like the Bakshtin in these cohomology rings. And cohomology isn't just a ring. It's a ring over that thing. That thing's called the Steiner algebra. And so there, what we'll find out is that actually the cohomology with is not just a DGA, but it's a Steenrod. I mean, it's not just a ring, but it's a Steenrod ring. And tracking that Steenrod structure is useful and important and helps with calculations. And the Bakshtin is part of that general structure.